as users, you don't know what those MDMs went through to develop what that time is. You can't say whether going a day over is actually going to have a problem or not. And frankly, the MDMs would have qualified it for longer if they thought it would be acceptable to do so. So yeah, they should be very concerned about using a device that has gone beyond its shelf life.
From the basement to the boardroom, from ideas to innovation, you are listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Each week, you will encounter diverse perspectives from subject matter experts across the country and around the globe. Frontline technicians, CEOs, engineers, and entrepreneurs, with a common goal to help you fight dirty every instrument, every time. Whether you are tuning in for education or inspiration, we are glad you are here. Now, turn on those washers and turn up the volume. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Jennifer Benokin, MDM and Regulatory Specialist with DuPont, and Melinda Elamari, Sterile Processing Educator and Quality Control Manager with Duke Raleigh. Jennifer is an MDM or Medical Device Manufacturer and Regulatory Specialist with DuPont Tyvek Medical Packaging, working with medical device and pharmaceutical organizations. Jen has worked in the medical device community since 1991 in a variety of packaging-related roles. Jen earned her undergraduate degree in manufacturing systems engineering at Kettering University, and she came to love packaging through her cooperative work experience at CPI Guidant. Jen obtained her Master's of International Management degree from St. Thomas University. She's currently the subcommittee chairperson for ASTM F02.50 Package Design and Development and co-chair for AMI's Standards Workgroup 7 Packaging Working Group. Jen is active in the Institute of Packaging Professionals, obtaining Lifetime Certified Packaging Professional Certification, and has recently been elected to the Board of Directors. She is also Vice Chair on its Medical Device Packaging Technical Committee. Jennifer is currently editing the third edition of the Medical Device Packaging Engineering Handbook, and Melinda Elamari is the Educator and Quality Control Manager for Sterile Processing at Duke Raleigh Hospital. She served as the Lead Instructor for the Central Sterile Program at Durham Technical Community College for 6 years and serves as president-elect on the North Carolina Association for Hospital Central Service Professionals Board. She began her career in the medical field as a surgical technologist, where she specialized in open-heart surgery. Melinda holds 6 certifications in sterile processing through CBSPD and ISHM. She's an active member of AMI and sits on 7 national standard writing committees. Melinda was featured in the September-October 2019 issue of AMI's BI&T magazine and serves on the Sterilization Department Editorial Advisory Board for BI&T magazine. Melinda has presented at local APEC conferences, and her abstract posters have been displayed at the Duke Quality and Safety Conference, Cone Symposium, National ISHM Conference, and the AHA Team Steps Conference. In April 2019, Melinda was awarded the Diane Fink Outstanding Leadership in Central Services Award. Please note that the conversation today is our guests' own understanding and opinions and are not representative of the companies for which they work. And Mike, we've got a couple of subject matter experts, I'd say, on today's episode. We're going to be talking about the difference between time-related and event-related storage, and also a little bit about their involvement with the Kilmer Innovations Group.
Yeah, and like most things, I know that probably a lot of people might see that and think time-related versus event-related, that's a very simple concept. You know, how much can you really dig into that? And we're going to find out that there's a lot more to it than what you might think. So I'm very excited to talk to him about this.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and to directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check
test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Jennifer Binokin, MDM and Regulatory Specialist with DuPont, and Melinda Elamari, Sterile Processing Educator and Quality Control Manager with Duke Raleigh. And we're going to be talking about time-related and event-related storage on this episode. Jennifer, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
And Melinda, you as well. You're quite a dynamic team, as Mike and I have learned getting ready for the recording of this episode. So really happy to have you on as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
All right. So let's start with Melinda and really just set the baseline for the interview today, which is explaining the difference between time-related storage and event-related storage.
So for me, I like to make it as simple as possible. And when I think of time-related versus event-related, I kind of just go to, let's say, a gallon of milk. A gallon of milk in your refrigerator has an expiration date. That right there is a time-related storage, right? You got to use it within a certain period of time. Now, if you have your refrigerator go out, then you have an issue with an event-related that equals an event-related. Now, if we translate that into the operating room and into sterile processing, and what does that look like? So for instance, if we have a suture pack and it has an expiration date on it, that's another time-related situation. If you have a suture pack that gets ran over by your back table, then you now have an event-related situation. And we can go on and on with our examples on that.
Well, then let's think about what are some of those examples of events, because I mean, I think everybody kind of gets the obvious one, the example that you mentioned where, you run over it with a cart or, your back table. But what are some of the other types of events that may come up during the course of a regular day?
Yeah, so some other events that could cause an issue would be, let's say, water accidentally gets splashed on the package. You know, a lot of times, depending on your situation of your space constraints that you're dealing with, water could get onto a sterile package that could cause an issue and cause the package not to be sterile. That could be an event-related situation. Humidity in the sterile storage room. What if the AC goes out? Then you have natural disasters that cause event-related situations. There's so many different factors. Construction, engineering comes in and they want to just check the AC vents or whatever, or check the pipes in the ceiling. They move ceiling tiles and now all that dust and contaminants just drops right onto your wrapped sterile items, if they don't cover them. Those are other event-related situations that could happen.
When Melinda and I were originally starting to talk about questions that were going to be posed as part of this podcast, we were looking at this question, and my coming from the medical device manufacturer side throughout my entire career, we talk about time-related events and event-related events when we go to qualify our packaging. However, while they're technically separate entities, we really drive everything off of the shelf life information. And so that's where you'll see those expiration dates on the labeling. And so one of the things that Melinda and I were talking about is we often use very similar terminology between the MDM, medical device manufacturer side of things, and the clinical use of it, but they don't always mean quite the same things, and they're not always applied quite the same way. So there's a union of sorts of how we use the terms, but how we use them and what we're using them for and about are not always the same.
Yeah. And piggybacking what Jennifer was just saying, because we do come from two different worlds, one of the great things that I think that's brought Jen and I together to be able to sit down and have those conversations and understand where each other has come from is the Kilmore group that we've been working on together. And Jen can really dive more into that and talk about that. But that just gives us the ability of a manufacturer side and a user side to come together and say, hey, you know, how do you see things? What do you call things? What are, you know, the ways that you deal with this situation, and from a clinical perspective and from a manufacturer perspective? And it's very mind blowing when you think you're on the same page with certain terminology or words and you think, oh, of course they know what that means, but they don't, or we don't. So
let's kind of explore then that dynamic of two different ways of looking at things. So I think I heard that one side, the MDM side, looks at things more in terms of shelf life, but I'm coming from more so the sterile processing side. And typically, you know, we think of things more so as event related, but that doesn't necessarily mean that shelf life has no meaning. So let's kind of start to unpack those two things and think through, okay, so what are then, from your perspective then, what are some of the advantages and disadvantages of, let's start with time-related storage then.
So I think from a user side and sterile processing world, time-related storage has an advantage of making sure that items are being rotated and processed, making sure if you have something, let's say, that is a time-related, you inspect that item, you inspect it as it comes through assembly. And so that kind of gives you the ability to look at the item closer every single time and have a more comprehension of what inventory you have. I find that a lot of times in a lot of facilities when we do have the event related, and that's usually the overall concept out there, and that's what most facilities follow, but sometimes things get lost in that event related. So there are some disadvantages to that. And a lot of times it's the inventory. What do we have? Things are on the shelf for maybe 2 or 3 years and they don't even realize that it's still there taking up space. So I think in that sense, time related can be very beneficial, but I think also, time-related can be very exhausting for users, especially sterile processing. You know, when I started in the surgical world way back when, I'm not going to say how long ago, it used to be that we would have to break everything down every year and reprocess everything. So that was exhausting. It was time consuming, and it was just frustrating for the people who had to track all that down and constantly think of ways to keep track of what was processed when. So I think the event related process has really given us that ability to use our time wisely in other areas and be more constructive with that, and have the products ready to go when needed. But I do think there are some disadvantages to it.
So from the MDM side, we use ISO 11607, which Amy has a mirror group for in the U.S. here to ultimately review it as part of the international review process and then also adopt it once it gets completely revised. But within 11607, it kind of dictates to medical device manufacturers how to qualify and validate a package for use for a terminally sterile device. There's actually information in there for sterile processing departments should they so choose to use it. It's been adopted by a lot of the healthcare systems, I think, if not all, in the EU, but it's different from, I think, is it ST79 that is typically followed in the US. But again, it's a tool out there that sterile processing departments can use. But within this, it details how to qualify, like I said, and there is stability testing, which is what we would equate to aging or shelf life. And then there's performance performance testing, which is what we would equate to distribution simulation and making sure that it goes through the expected events that it would go through and still come out maintaining its ability to keep it as a sterile barrier. And so they work hand in hand, but they're also independent from each other because theoretically, if something's sitting on a shelf over time, as long as nothing external to it happens, as long as no event happens to it, the theory going back to Louis Pasteur is in the whole concept of tortuous path, it will stay or remain sterile for forever. What dictates that shelf life for manufacturers can be a number of things. It could be the materials of the packaging. It could be the testing that the medical device manufacturer chooses to put it under for shelf life. We have to do both. Well, we don't have to. The requirement is you have to, at the very least, do real-time aging, but many manufacturers will actually test using a method that we refer to as accelerated aging. So it's elevated temperatures for shorter periods of time. So like 1 month at an elevated temperature would typically equal about 1 year of shelf life. And that allows MDMs to release their devices into the market quicker, but they're still required to do that real-time aging to justify that actual shelf life that's put on the label that you would use on the user side of it to determine whether it's quote-unquote okay to use or not. There could be device-related restrictions. You know, if you take a defibrillator or pacemaker that has a limited life as far as the battery is concerned because you want to be able to implant it in someone and have it last long time, you may have like a shorter shelf life. So there's numerous discussions that go on as part of the development of a new medical device as to what goes into making that shelf life that goes on the label, how long it is. Now, that said, not all materials are created equal from a shelf life perspective. And so over time, and not even necessarily over time, their ability to be a microbial barrier or filter, if you will, in the first place varies from one material to another. So not all materials are created equal. And that's something I think that there's a whole bunch of things within this conversation that we could talk about for hours. But I think that this Kilmer Innovations and Packaging Group that Melinda and I are part of, as well as a bunch of other industry people, and it's part of why we wanted to do the podcast here today with you, is to invite the sterile processing community into the discussion as well, is to start having some of these conversations like we're having here tonight and talk about the differences and how they relate into going into things and help understand more about what happens and doesn't happen as part of the development process for medical device packaging. And that might include, you know, whether and how much a material is capable of withstanding over time its microbial barrier properties.
So I think probably a pretty universal experience in sterile processing is, especially if you're in a facility where you pull the carts, you know, you pull a peel pack off of the shelf and maybe a second peel pack comes along for the ride. And then all of a sudden it hits the ground and you see the person kind of pick it up and they kind of glance at it and say, hey, I think this still looks okay. You know, does that constitute necessarily an event? Because like you said, part of the packaging considerations are expected events throughout its lifespan, right? So would, in that case, in your opinion, does dropping an item on the floor, even if it appears to have no damage, is that technically an event?
That's a really good question. And actually, one of the first things that started bonding Melinda and I together, we had been preparing for the ISHM conference this past April. We were going to be doing a breakout session there and talking about this type of topic there. So I don't know that there's ever been a study done as far as if an item, a sterile, terminally sterile device gets dropped on the floor and you pick it up, whether it can be used or not. But when Melinda and I were talking a little bit earlier, we were talking about the concept of the 5 second rule. And there's been numerous studies done on the 5 second rule, right? Whether it's okay to eat something after you've dropped something on the floor and you picked it up, is it okay to eat it? And a lot of times what you hear back is, no, it's really not okay because it picks up quite a bit of bacteria and other, you know, possible viruses, other germs along the way in that less than 5 second opportunity of the package coming in contact with the floor. So while your device inside may still be sterile, someone is going to open it and their hands are going to touch that outside. And so now those bacteria, germs, whatever, are going to be on that opener's hands. And there's potential for it to get dislodged and popped into the air and land on surfaces that you don't want it to land on. And now that person that opened it is going to go and touch other things. and potentially contaminate other things. So it's not just a matter of, is the package damaged to create a hole that would definitely render the sterile barrier ineffective, but there's also, is it now carrying items that may cause problems? So I think it's not really a fully simple answer, and I think that the Kilmer Group could potentially go into doing a study to prove or disprove the correctness of picking it up off the floor and using it. But when you start thinking about it, you're kind of like, oh yeah, it is possible that it's carrying something as opposed to just preventing things from getting in. Melinda, did you have anything that you wanted to add on it?
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things that has been really interesting is having these conversations. At one point it was said, well, you know, manufacturers, when they actually test the device to be dropped from certain feet and with a certain amount of pressure. And as Jen and I were talking about the concept, she was like, wait, no, we test it from a package, like in a package shipping mode. And so I'm like, oh, okay. So it changes how you look at things when you hear what they actually do. And then if that is the case, if a manufacturer is doing that kind of testing, or can they do that kind of testing, then, you know, that's one of the things that we're hoping to get out of this group, again, is to say, hey, is this happening? And if it is, guess what? Your end users need to know what the results were and if this is a possibility. And, you know, back to your example of pulling a case, and that's always been one of the highlight issues of, can I use this? I don't see a hole in it, but can I use it? And right now we always say, when in doubt, throw it out or reprocess it, right? Like, be safe. But then as we start talking, well, what if this is the last one? And what if the patient's on the table? And like Jen's saying, there's no definitive answer yet, because what determines the risk factor? And is it safer for that patient to use that product, or is it safer for the patient to be under anesthesia longer? So there's so many multiple variables that have to be worked out and tested and talked about and thought about. And that's something we're hoping to really maybe get into a little bit more.
Yeah, that would be great. And I really love the 5-second rule perspective on that. But you're highlighting the critical thinking, but then the need for data and research to help guide critical thinking. Because sometimes our analyses, like the way you were just describing it, is not necessarily substantiated with data. It's just, this is what makes sense. It might be intuitive, it might not be intuitive, but you're walking yourselves through basic principles of infection control because there is no data available to sort of help us answer that at the level that people may want it to be. But you're right, that dropping an item, it really does highlight the fact that that's not the one sort of thing you're looking for, is just holes. There is an event that happened, and it's really going to tee up three questions that I want to ask you, and they're maybe a little bit more quick hitting, but it's around confusion in the industry regarding shelf life of packaging. And you were starting to go there, and we talked about the dropping an item, and is that an event? But what about shelf life from the standpoint of, does a facility need to be concerned about the manufacturer's shelf life claims if their policy is event related instead of time related, which I think ties those two conversations together nicely.
So Justin, I do want to answer the question that you just asked, but I do also want to add on to that whole concept of 5-second rule and critical thinking and everything. I do have a philosophy, personal hypothesis, if you will, that when healthcare workers come into work, they can't check their consumer habits at the door. And whether people conscientiously think about packaging or not, there are always constant thoughts in the back of their head about packaging from a consumer perspective. The ones that always pop out to my head to talk about are, like, you know, soda bottles or water bottles or TV packaging or even yogurt packaging. So when you go to open a yogurt package, which is pretty much a universal experience, right? A lot of people eat yogurt in this world. When you peel it back, if it doesn't feel like it has always felt before, you question its validity as having had a good seal or not. And so you question whether you should be eating it or not. Same thing with the pop containers, soda containers, water containers, if it's too easy to unscrew, you wonder if it's been tampered with. And then also from a event type of situation, when you go and buy a TV and you bring it home, or, you know, any other kind of electrical product that has, you know, pretty dense packaging around it and it's nice and well padded, you accidentally drop it. And that's kind of what we were talking about here. You think in the back of your head, it's okay. It's fine. The TV is going to work. It's been designed to do this. They did a lot of testing to do this. And so Melinda kind of pointed it out a little bit earlier about similar thoughts, right? How these packages have been tested. They have not always been tested how healthcare systems handle them. And that's another thing that we want to jump into in this Kilmer Innovations and Packaging Group, is really truly to understand what's happening in that last 100 yards once it hits the hospital or healthcare system's door. What is happening to that individual package that's now not part of a shipping unit anymore? And so, and from the healthcare worker side, I would, you know, really ask people to kind of step back and think about how they're handling the package once they go to grab it from the stores or inventory to the point where they actually open it to use it in an aseptic manner. What are they doing to it? Are they using their teeth to open it? Are they shoving it in a pocket? We don't have tests to do that, to simulate that. We don't test for that type of use at this point. So it's pretty robust, but at the same time, there's fragility to it too. So I just wanted to kind of draw that out. Again, not spend too much time on it now and here, but it's, again, something that hopefully we'll be getting into in this Kilmer Innovations and Packaging Group at some point.
I don't know about you guys, but I just got a visual of somebody opening it with their teeth. Hilarious. Anyway.
Well, you and I were talking about them doing that. They're like, that's what happens also in like emergent settings, right? When you're in an ambulance and one person is, you have two people in the rig, one person is driving, one person is managing the patient. You're driving 70 miles an hour down the highway. You're trying to hold the patient who's clearly in distress in place while you're trying to open, you know, something as simple as a needle to be able to, you know, set a line in them, or I'm saying that wrong, but, you know, put a line in. They're going to have to use their teeth at some point because they don't have enough hands.
And you do bring up a good point. We did have that conversation and talk about that. And, you know, that's something that was actually brought to my attention with my group, the aseptic presentation group for the Kilmer Conference, of the ambulance staff and those first responders out there on the streets. And, you know, I never even thought about them. I mean, that sounds sad. I don't mean like that. But I never thought that, you know, the concept that they actually have to open sterile packages, like Jen was just saying, and, you know, in the crazy situations and scenarios. So yeah, I guess in that sense, they would be using their teeth. But I did want to kind of talk about like what Jen was just saying on the sense of the feeling of the package. And we all can pretty much relate to that when we're in the operating room or we're popping a tray. And, you know, when we're talking about packaging, I think we all kind of sense go straight to blue wraps or peel packs, you know, but also rigid containers. And once you pop that rigid container, you can kind of feel that, hey, that latch was not right. There was something wrong with that. And you start inspecting, right? Or even a wrap, you know, you can say, hey, I'm really having to tug this first fold a lot. So what was wrong? Was this thing wrapped way too tight? So I do agree, Jen, there are definitely things that in the clinical aspect that would trigger your thought process to start questioning what the packaging was like or what was happening with it.
Okay, so let's go back. I know I asked one question, but you added some really important information there, but I want to re-ask the one. Does a facility need to be concerned about manufacturer's shelf life claims when their policy is event-related instead of time-related?
Yeah, so absolutely. Again, you know, going back to that concept of ISO 11607 and what MDMs go through to qualify that, not only their package, but their device as well, and all of the things that go into determining what the shelf life is or their time-related storage qualifications. Absolutely, because as users, you don't know what those MDMs went through to develop what that time is. You can't say whether going a day over is actually going to have a problem or not. And frankly, the MDMs would have qualified it for longer if they thought it would be acceptable to do so. So yeah, they should be very concerned about using a device that has gone beyond its shelf life.
Well, let me ask you another question that kind of rolls right into that then, because I know we're exploring the two sides, you know, medical device manufacturer and then the hospital environment. So let's just keep exploring that. Let's ask the next question. Does exceeding the approved shelf life then constitute an event?
Well, I think then you're at that point. I don't know that adulterating a product is technically the term to apply here. It could be off-label usage, right? Because it's you're using it beyond what the manufacturer has told you to use it. So ultimately, it's at your risk, and potentially the patient could probably sue the hospital or healthcare system in having had a device that was expired used on them. So I don't think it's worth it. The risk is too high, in my opinion. So yeah, I think it is an event. I don't know how it can't be. In the way that we're defining event in this conversation, right? Like nothing technically happened to the device other than it passed a date. But that date is very important.
And the risk shifts from the manufacturer to the hospital. So there's two different risks. There's the risk that it could actually cause an event for the patient. But then there's the other risk where if that does happen, the liability shifts from one party to another, correct?
I think, I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV or anything like that, but I would think so, right? I mean, most of the time, that's how you null and void any warranty that's given by a manufacturer is you use it outside of the parameters that they've told you to use it in. And they have said December 31st, 2020 is the last day you use this. So if you use it on January 1st, 2021, you have gone outside the confines of what they said is safe and effective use.
And that really does lead us into a very important question, which is the question of spoilage. And that's a unusual term for healthcare typically. You know, typically you hear that used in manufacturing, or especially if you work in a grocery store, you know, you're familiar with this concept of spoilage because these are the things that sit on the shelf so long that they go bad and therefore they can't sell anymore. But if we take that same concept and apply it to healthcare, that there are things that may sit on our shelf for a really long time, or there may be something that happens to them that makes them unable to be used on a patient. And so any medical device, whether it's something that's reprocessed in sterile processing or if it's a single-use device, anything that doesn't get used on a patient but instead just doesn't get used at all for whatever reason is waste. Somebody has to bear the cost of that. And so I want to know, what are strategies that we can employ to help to reduce spoilage on our devices that are packaged up?
So, Mike, I think, you know, when we're in the user aspect and sterile processing, also in the operating room, there are some things that we can do to really be cautious of what we're doing to help reduce that spoilage. So, you know, first would be our FIFO, first in, first out, making sure that we have proper rotation of our products so that we are using them before that expiration date happens. I think that's one that has really been emphasized a lot in the literature lately, and people are really paying attention to that. The other thing could be the storage, you know, storing our peel packs. The way we put peel packs into a bin, you know, stuffing 50 or 60 of them into this little bin, you know, starts creating wrinkles and creating creases, which wind up creating holes or damage the integrity of the package. But even just in the operating room, being cautious where you put your case card. Are you putting it next to something where, you know, you have a drip going and that drip could potentially spill, or next to a suction, or is there something that could splatter, making sure that it's covered? So let's say if you don't use a tray, you're now not having to waste the whole process that was already done on that tray. The other concept of storage is stacking. You know, that's another event that we really didn't talk about, stacking. We all face storage and space constraints in our facilities. Well, a lot of us do. And part of that is trying to figure out, what do we do with vendor trays? You know, that's always a hot topic. And how do we store them? You know, we stack them? Are you making sure that they're not being stacked? You know, because those can create vent-related issues where we cause damage to our packages. So I think, you know, just taking a step back and maybe doing an analysis of your area and what you're looking at, and really kind of look at it from a different perspective. You know, sometimes I think it helps to get an outside perspective, maybe somebody from like performance services or something, looking at your area and saying, hey, you know, maybe if we do this, we can help reduce the waste and the spoilage that we're seeing. And just little things like that add up.
Well, really nice job, ladies. And I want to make sure that we point the listening audience in the direction of the Kilmer Innovations Group, because I know we have a number of colleagues and contacts in the industry in common who've said great things about the group. How can they learn more? How can we point them in the right direction? Because I do feel like this interview was just barely scratching the surface.
Well, I hope that's an invitation to future conversations, because some of the things that Melinda was just saying really triggered my mind into additional conversations. So we loved being here today. So thank you. The best place to find us to answer your question, though, is on LinkedIn. And you can search Kilmer Innovations in Packaging and then just request to join the group. We do have a survey on there to help us figure out where your feet are pointed as far as your interests and where they lie. So we have 4 buckets that we're currently working on. One is that last 100 yards. Oh, this goes along the lines to Melinda's point on spoilage. How items are stored is another thing that we want to delve into. When we hear about the shelf carton being taken off and rubber bands being put around a pack of 10, because that's what it came in the shelf carton to keep them together, it hasn't been tested for that. Please don't do it. Wire racks are the destruction of most medical packaging. Don't put them directly on wire racks, because there's burrs on there that can poke a hole quicker than you know what. So again, a whole nother podcast, we could talk about that. So that's one of the buckets, the last 100 yards. And another one is aseptic handling. How do we open them? Do we have any studies? And from the sounds of it, we don't necessarily have great studies that indicate that how we're doing the aseptic handling and opening are truly the best way. And so there are a bunch of people that are already involved in that topic that are trying to understand a little bit better and put some science behind the whole aseptic handling concept. We also have making things quicker, faster, and that's along the lines of processes, test methods, etc. How do we get things quicker through our testing systems? And there's some definite applications from a sterile processing group for that perspective as well. And then the last one is sustainability. And I know this is something that the packaging industry is talking a lot about. And I know that healthcare systems are also getting more enthusiastic about how do we manage the waste coming out of using these devices. So Kilmer Innovations and Packaging Group on LinkedIn, quest to join, take the survey, and we'll get you on a project team as quickly as possible.
And can I just add to that we definitely need some users on these groups? We need more users to represent our side. So please, users, go and sign up and join the change that's going to happen to make our lives easier.
All right. Excellent work. And we do always encourage the frontline technicians, the managers, the supervisors, the directors, get involved. And there's lots of groups out there that need that voice to be involved. And Kilmer Innovations Group is just one. Jennifer, Melinda, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much, Justin. It's been great.
That was Jennifer Binokin, MDM and Regulatory Specialist with DuPont, and Melinda Elamari, Sterile Processing Educator and Quality Control Manager with Duke Raleigh. And I know we've got, as I mentioned, a number of colleagues in the industry that have been involved with the Kilmer Innovations Group, Mike, but more data, more research. Let's start answering the questions. And I love the fact that they're encouraging industry professionals to get more and more involved. We've heard that from other groups that they're involved with, that want more frontline technicians, managers, supervisors, and directors to get involved. And so I can't do anything but always encourage taking an active role in the organizations that are shaping our industry.
Absolutely. And I think anywhere you go, there's a hunger for sterile processing professionals to have their voices heard. And this is one of those opportunities for sterile processing professionals to get their opinions out there, to get their experiences out there, and do it in a format and in a place that's going to have a significant impact on what standards and what policies are being written in the future. And so this is critical, and this is our opportunity. So let's step up to the plate.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support Beyond Clean by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review, because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike and myself, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Beyond Clean.